Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show. This is your host, Jamal Brown. Today is Thursday, April 28th. As you all know, I am the creator of the 365 Days of Black Facts calendar found at www.black365.us. And today's Black Fact is the inventor, George Tolliver, was awarded a patent for the ship vessel propeller, 1891. I like to tell people there is no area of human existence that African people, and specifically African Americans, have not impacted in a positive way. Tonight we have another fantastic show for you. We are on with a dynamic woman by the name of Miss Linda Shockley. Hopefully I'm pronouncing her name right, Shockley. She is the president of the Lawnside Historical Society, and today we'll be talking about a literary series that's coming up, along with some guest speakers and other dynamic events that are planned. Ms. Shockley, are you on the line with us? Ms. Shockley, are you there? Okay, we are plugging her in. She'll be tuning in a few moments, I am sure. In the meantime, we'll talk about some other Black history. Let me see. Yesterday, Wednesday, the 27th, was the birthday of the good Mayor Cory Booker. Hello, I just heard someone come on the line.
Hello, Ms. Shockley? Linda Shockley. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Ms. Shockley. This is Jamal Brown, the host for this evening.
Good.
I just went ahead and read off some of your credentials as we waited for you to get connected here with us. I'm glad you're here. How's everything this evening?
Everything's wonderful.
Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Well, if you're ready, we can just jump right into this thing.
Great.
All right. I already let the listening audience know that you are the president of the Lawnside Historical Society and that you have a couple of speaker series and other events coming up here shortly. Is that correct?
That's right. We are having the Jesse Redmond Fawcett Literary Series tomorrow and Saturday.
Awesome, awesome. Before we jump into that, I have to ask my patented question first. Mm-hmm. Please tell us, in the listening audience, who is Miss Linda Shockley?
Well, Linda Shockley is a native of Lawnside, New Jersey. I grew up here and went away to school, but this African-American historic town stayed with me no matter where I lived. And when I had an opportunity to return and take up residence here again, I was moved to work with people to organize a historical society because we'd never had one before. So a lot of my life is dedicated to promoting and preserving the history of this community, a rarity in the northern United States for an African-American municipality to have been incorporated and continue to be governed by African-American people.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Please educate us and the listening audience. What exactly is a historic society?
The Historical Society is a membership organization, and what we do is offer programs to promote the history of our community. So New York City has a New York Historical Society, and it's dedicated to promoting and explaining and exploring the history of New York City. Similarly, our society is devoted to exploring and explaining the history of this community, which has roots in colonial times and the Underground Railroad. So we have monthly meetings. People pay dues. We own a house museum called the Peter Mott House Underground Railroad Museum. And we offer the Jesse Redmond Fawcett Literary Series. And we're always looking for more ways to learn about our culture. We have oral history projects that we've undertaken. We've done some archaeological digs around the area and the community. And we just try to promote the history of our community, get this into the curriculum in our schools, and really spread the message around not only the state of New Jersey, but the region.
Amazing. One thing that you just said that stuck out to me was the archaeological digs. Were there any findings?
Well, we did find some things that are indicative of the origin of Native Americans in this area.
Okay.
We were not the first folks here, and there was a group of people called the Lenni Lenape, and we have found arrowheads. We also found some fire rock that the archaeologists believe were used by people in prehistoric times.
Prehistoric times, wow.
Prehistoric times based on the dating that they were able to do. So there are all kinds of treasures waiting for us to discover and to learn about.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You mentioned the oral history project as well. Shine a little light on that if you don't mind.
Well, we've done a couple of oral history projects. One we started with descendants of people who settled here after having escaped on the Underground Railroad. And there are several families still in this area. If you're familiar with the Still family, an American First family, they are here. We have the Cooper family. We have the Farmer family and the Arthur family. And these are people who could actually trace in their oral tradition ancestors who came here from enslavement and settled here in freedom in the 1800s. And so we did interviews with people, allowing them to share those family stories, recording them and transcribing them. And then we also did some other oral histories with people who told us the stories of the community. Now, history, the 20th century is ancient history. and so we had a lot of people talking about different aspects of the development of the town that they were familiar with, once again passed down through families, and also the founding of the town, the incorporation of it in the 1920s and so on. So these oral histories have been once again recorded on video and then transcribed, and copies are at the Spring On Library, the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, the Rutgers University Library, and a couple of other repositories, the National Library of Congress also, so that this information can be found and researched.
Okay. Just in case someone missed it when we first came on, where is Lawnside?
Lawnside is in southern New Jersey. We're 50 miles from Atlantic City and 10 miles across the Delaware River from Philadelphia.
Okay, okay. And if you could just make it plain for us, what makes Lawnside historical?
Well, Lawnside is historical because it's an African-American community. It was organized as such in the 1800s. Our oldest church here was organized in 1792.
Wow.
It's called the Snow Hill Church. It's now called Mount Pisgah African Methodist Episcopal Church. And as I mentioned, we're right across the river from Philadelphia, and the Reverend Richard Allen was a circuit preacher who came to that church, and
wow.
That is how it became an AME
church. AME
church, early 1800s.
Right.
Yes. So I'm not bragging when I say we're brimming with history, because we have grave sites, we have burials here, we have church cemeteries, and we have a sectarian cemetery, and we have more than 150 Civil War veterans, African-American Civil War veterans, everything from the Massachusetts 54th to the 22nd to the 3rd to the 6th. Any black regiment that you can identify, we have here. We also have a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from the Civil War buried here in this community. We have a gentleman at the Mount Pisgah Church Cemetery who was in the War of 1812.
Well,
so African Americans have always sought to be free, and as I heard you say in your introduction, have positively contributed to the development of
all areas,
nation,
all areas,
and
so
our
nation.
State, all areas.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So, and we're proof of that. We're an example of that. And as I said, we were one of the first northern incorporated communities. You'll find that after the Civil War in places like Mount Bayou, Mississippi, and in Princeville, North Carolina, free Africans established their own communities and began to govern themselves. We here were functioning pretty much as a self-contained community, but just formalized that arrangement in the 1920s. So our history goes a long way.
Let me ask you about those who incorporated. Could remind us again that date of incorporation?
April 1926.
Okay, awesome. And who were these brave individuals who incorporated it, and what was the process they had to go through to incorporate it? Were these individuals who fled from the South? Were these, give us a profile
some of the people are from generations who fled, and here's a misconception.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who was enslaved was not in the South.
Right.
Slavery was an institution throughout the
United States,
and the 13 colonies, and New Jersey had slavery. Now, what New Jersey did, owing largely to a concerned group of abolitionists led by members of the Society of Friends, was to outlaw the slave trade in the state in 1790. Then, in 1805, they came up with this process they called gradual abolition. Gradual abolition, which meant...
Sounds like a joke. Sounds like a joke.
Well, listen. If you were born after the 4th of July, 1805, you were born free in the state of New Jersey.
That's a joke.
However, if your mother was a slave, then you were indentured to her master as a male until the age of 25 and as a female until the age of 21. Mother was still a slave and would be until the day she died, unless her freedom was purchased or she was emancipated in her master's will or something or some other act. But it was possible to have slavery and slaves in New Jersey during and through the Civil War.
Hmm.
So that's something that's not understood, and there were a lot of discussions about that, but you were asking me about the descendants of the people who were the ones who incorporated the community,
right.
And some
wait,
of those
before,
people...
Wait, before I let you go on, could you run some of those dates back for us? These dates are even beyond or earlier than what many people saw as being possible for us to be doing things. So, again, could you give me the date of incorporation and a few of those other dates that you rattled off?
Well, the borough was incorporated in 1926.
Okay.
So we're into the 20th century. But the ancestors of the people who orchestrated the incorporation came here, some as slaves along the Underground Railroad, some as people who bought their freedom or whose freedom was purchased for them. For instance, we have a family here called the Cooper family. Now, their ancestor was a teenager when his freedom was purchased for him by a family in a neighboring community, a Quaker family. And he took on their last name. They
mm-hmm.
taught him how to read and write and how to calculate so that he could protect his earnings. He
assets, if you will.
His assets. He eventually married, and he purchased property here. And if you go onto these two parallel streets here in this community, everybody is a descendant of this
that
gentleman,
family.
Mr. Cooper. Mr.
Wow.
Cooper and his wife, who was also from another small hamlet of free African people, had 13 children. And one of those 13, Charles Cooper Jr., was among the people who incorporated the municipality.
That's awesome.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish thought.
One of the incorporators, the first borough clerk, was a man named Horace Bryant, and he was a descendant of people from this community called Sadlertown, which was another kind of colony of people who had escaped from slavery, and he became the borough clerk. So these people, understanding the process of incorporation, petitioned the state of New Jersey. They started this process in the early 1920s. They petitioned the state of New Jersey, and then in March of 1926, the legislature actually incorporated our municipality. See, there were townships that were deciding to go it alone, and the decision had to be made whether this community should become part of a larger community
mm-hmm.
or if it should become its own freestanding community.
Standalone, right?
Yeah, so there was newspaper articles, you know, Negroes plan to govern themselves kind of, you know, which
in, oh my goodness.
In the 20s was, you know, a tremendous idea. And they actually went back and looked at the progress the community had made in the year.
Self-reliance, self-determination.
So we had our own churches, our own schools. They had, you know, established our own mutual aid societies. And, you know, there was some discussion about African mutual aid societies. So you had all kinds of lodges and fellowships. In addition, you had support from the Society of Friends and the Quaker communities, too.
That's amazing. Let me ask this. Am I correct in thinking that New Jersey was, if not the last, one of the last states in the Union to free or emancipate their indentured servants or their African enslaved individuals?
Well, you know what? I can't speak exactly to that. But I know that it was the last state in the North to ratify the 14th Amendment to the Constitution.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what I was saying.
Yeah, it was 1876, so it was 9 years after the Civil War.
Oh, my goodness.
Almost 11 years after the Civil War that they decided to break down and ratify that.
Right.
Yeah.
And another early day that you mentioned, I believe it was 1805. Could you give me those facts again, where you said if an individual was born after the 4th of July and their mother...
After the 4th of July, 1805, this was the gradual abolition.
Gradual abolition.
Yeah,
right.
This is my
first time hearing of that.
Is it really?
People
can look this information up. Don't take my word for it.
Certainly.
And research it, but you'll find a very interesting history. And also, New Jersey was kind of, schizophrenic in the sense that the northern part of the state was very much supportive of the Confederacy because of their need for raw materials for manufacturing.
Mm.
And the southern part of the state tended to
still is that way.
yeah. The southern part of the state did support the Union, but New Jersey just has a very interesting Underground Railroad history in and of itself.
Got it. I'm being told over here, Miss Leslie is informing me, you know, it's divided, and, you know, so there's a distinct difference between what's known as the West and East Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Wow.
Very much so. New Jersey is the half hasn't been told, I'll just say.
Leave it at that, huh? Let me
mm-hmm.
ask you about, let's go contemporary, and then we'll jump back to Underground Railroad questions here in a second. How are things in the city today? Is it predominantly African-American today? How are race relations? Again, if you can give us a quick photo snapshot of how things are today.
It's a predominantly African-American community. According to the last census, our population is in the area of about 2,800.
Okay.
96% of those people are African-American. We have smaller percentages of Asian-Americans, Latinos, and a very few people with a Native American heritage, and the remainder are Caucasian heritage. The median income is about $38,000 a year.
Okay.
And we have a wide range of houses. We are 1 square mile. We are 1 square mile. We have a K-8 school, and our children attend public high school, even at the county vocational and technical school, or in a nearby receiving school district. So our education goes from kindergarten to eighth grade, and we have our own fire department, which is approaching its 100th anniversary in 2012. And a police department, and of course, the mayor and council was incorporated and elected in 1926.
All these powerful things in one powerful square mile, huh?
Yes, and all Democratic borough council, and we have a borough administrator or professional manager who runs the work day to day. But the council members are elected, but part-time, essentially.
Okay.
They are paid part-time. Mm-hmm.
Taxes. Tell me about the taxes that go on there.
The taxes are a concern. Finances are a concern, as you might know. A lot of state aid and support has been cut. And we have homes that range from the low 80s, low 80,000 to homes in excess of 400,000. So some people are paying more than $25,000 a year.
In
property taxes, and some are paying less than $5,000. We're an older community. This is a rural area, pretty much in the 1940s and 30s. People raised animals up until the 1960s. They outlawed raising livestock and that kind of thing. But people had hogs and chickens and cows and pretty much farming, and people considered it the country. And
right.
the main attraction was to come here and get barbecue from the city. And say, I'm going out to the country. And people in Philadelphia said that they usually meant they were coming to Lawnside.
Right. I was going to ask that. How is the history there, the rich history, how is it embraced by the people who are there? Is it sort of something of, we've always known this, and so there's the passive about it, or how is it embraced?
Well, people have kind of taken it for granted. And in many cases, it was something we already knew. And then owing to the Underground Railroad connection, some of it was kind of secretive.
Mm-hmm.
But because of our teachers tended to be local people or people who had been educated at historically black colleges and universities, these were things that we talked about. When we had assemblies, we read, we sang Lift Every Voice and Sing. So we knew these songs. We knew about George Washington Carver and Harriet Tubman and other significant figures, and we used the information that was available to us through our culture. Our school doctor started practicing medicine in 1911, and he was a local kind of historian. So when we had so-called Negro History Week back in the 60s, Dr. Moore was often the speaker, and he could speak from personal experience, having graduated from Howard University in 1912, and he had seen a lot and been a lot of places. And
amazing.
He really
amazing.
Loved the community and the children in it.
Let me ask you about the upcoming events you got going on.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Leslie just sent me a message. Do you know Audrey? Audrey Thornton and the Beaumont Mansion?
Audrey Thornton and the Beaumont Mansion, yes, in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've been to the Beaumont. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there any sort of connections or synergy had between you all?
We did do some programming together. We haven't done anything lately, but we really should get back together.
Definitely.
As
yeah,
a matter of fact, last week there was an African-American history showcase at the Philadelphia Convention Center, and there are just so many interconnections between the groups that were there and us, and so we really need to do a better job of networking and keeping in touch with each other. But the wonderful thing about our Jesse Redman Fawcett series is that we're having Dr. Diane Turner, who is the curator of the Charles Blockson Collection at Temple University, come speak tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Lawnside Public School.
Okay, great. We have about 2.5 minutes left. If you want to give us a little bit more information about that, and of course contact information and how we can go about supporting you and all that good stuff.
Well, you can. People can come to Lawnside School at 7:30 tomorrow night to hear Dr. Turner talk about Jesse Redman Fawcett's struggle for social justice. Jesse Redman Fawcett was the editor of the Crisis magazine. She was a poet and a Harlem Renaissance novelist. Langston Hughes called her the midwife of the Harlem Renaissance.
Wow.
Her father was the pastor of Mount Pisgah AME Church in 1882 when she was born in Lawnside. She subsequently went on to be educated in Philadelphia public schools and to attend Cornell University and graduate Phi Beta Kappa in 1905.
From little old Lawnside, huh?
From little old Lawnside. So what we're doing is promoting her story and trying to let people know about the importance of literature, of poetry, and how it informs our lives and our struggles, and that someone from this community was a central figure and a protege of W.E.B. Du Bois and prominent in the NAACP and the Pan-Africanist movement in the 1920s, we think is a really important story. So we are trying to inform students as well as adults about this. We're having a poetry competition on Saturday, the 30th, at the public school, and children have been writing poems about social justice, and they will be reading those poems and receiving prizes for them.
That's
Saturday.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I have another announcement I must make. I'm hearing back by popular demand, the historical black-owned Underground Railroad Museum, the Belmont Museum, will be having its annual Mother's Day brunch and play. So that, too, is something I'm sure will be filled with history and, you know, let people know that history isn't some old dead thing. It's not a collection of, you know, old dusty stuff. It's alive. It's well. It helps, you know, shape our reality even today.
And informs us going forward.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For that information, I'm told people can contact Mrs. Thornton at 215-878-8844. Again, contact Mrs. Thornton about that Mother's Day brunch and play at 215-878-8844. Any last word from you? Again, we've got about maybe 30 seconds left here.
No, we just invite people to visit the Peter Monhouse Underground Railroad Museum in Lawnside, and you can go to our website, www.petermonhouse.org, for more information.
Sounds good. And, hey, we got a special announcement that just came through. There will be some tickets for you, Miss Shockley, for that Mother's Day bruncheon if you didn't have any plans. So, yeah, there's some tickets available for you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. That concludes our time here. It goes oh so quickly. I would like to thank you. I'd like to thank the guests and the listening audience. And please do tune in next week for another exciting show here on the Gist of Freedom Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
Never thought I'd see